Punk's not dead, and neither is New Wave. Join Buzz and Ben on Static Rage, the Punk and New Wave Album Review Podcast.
It is past Thanksgiving here at Static Rage, and we are feeling a little festive. A little festive in that we feel like we need to get dressed up and put on some glad rags. How are you doing today, Buzz?
I'm doing glamorous. How are you?
As Fergie once said, also glamorous. GLAMOROUS. So,
and for I think it's very fitting for tonight with what we're going to talk about.
I do too. We are talking about an album that I had not heard before we decided to record it by a band that I, of course, had heard of. The New York Dolls' debut album, released on July 27th of 1973, had a runtime of 42 minutes and 44 seconds, produced by Todd Rundgren, who is a phenomenal musician in his own right. The band at the time of recording was David Johansen on gong, harmonic, and vocals, Arthur Killer Kane on bass guitar, Jerry Nolan on drums, Sylvain on piano, rhythm guitar, and vocals, and Johnny Thunders on lead guitar and vocals. Some of you probably undoubtedly know David Johansen had a huge hit in the 80s on the name Buster Poindexter, which I doubt we will ever cover, but I figured I would go ahead and mention that here.
Actually, we can expand on that just one second before we could jump into this. I know he's been in other things, but for me, the most prominent one that always sticks out in my mind is in the late 80s, that Bill Murray movie Scrooged was out.
Yes.
And for those of you that have seen it, he plays the Ghost of Christmas Past. He's the cab driver smoking the stogie. So when I knew about this band, I did not know that was him until I looked at it, and I was like, that guy looks really familiar. And then did a little bit of research, and holy crap, it's the same guy. So if you want to know what he looks like, watch that movie and watch that part where he's in the cab driving Bill Murray around, and there you go.
Very cool. I don't think I knew that. As a matter of fact, I know I didn't know that. There were a couple of additional musicians on here. Buddy Bowser came in and played down some saxophone, and Todd Rundgren and Alex Spiranopoulos, I probably fucked that name up, both did some piano, with Rundgren also providing synthesizer.
So this is one of those bands, I don't think we've talked about proto-punk yet. So if we have, then please excuse us, but we have not. This is, yes, they're a punk band, but they kind of fall into almost more proto-punk, and I dare say even more almost glam rock at times. So I never really looked at this band as a true, honest-to-God punk band per se, but they do touch on that. If you do listen to this album, they will touch on this at times. But the glam rock feel is there. They very much feel like a kind of quasi garage band, not garage band in a negative sense. But that's kind of where proto-punk comes from. It's almost like a garage band feel, but it's produced much better. And as we get down to the song listings and the production tracks and how everything is done, we'll go into that as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, this is very proto-punk is the right term. There are certainly elements of glam. I'd say the glam is more in the image. If you look at the thumbnail associated with this particular recording, you'll see the album cover in which they're all wearing makeup and are wearing women's clothing and everything, which, I mean, for 1973 is, like, pretty aggressive, I would say.
And they're the title of the album, their band is written in lipstick.
Yeah, totally. So, but as far as the sound goes, you can hear elements of glam and you can hear elements of punk, but really this sounds to me like if David Bowie had written an album that the Rolling Stones recorded, because this dead up sounds like Stones song albums from around this same era to me anyway.
I was going to say, what I felt like the second or third time I listened through it, it honestly felt like something either Rolling Stones or even possibly Aerosmith in a way, if those bands did more fast-paced, getting closer to punk sound. That's really what it feels like. It's almost, and it does, if it's that proto-punk very well, to where it's a little more raw and aggressive than what was normal at the time, but it's not quite the punk that we've been talking about on this podcast so far.
No, not at all as far as that goes. And it's also got elements of, because of the use of the pianos and stuff, a strong Jerry Lee Lewis style of rock and roll vibe to it. But it is very hard and aggressive, which is something that, like, you don't necessarily get from Bowie or the Rolling Stones, but still, sonically, I thought it fit very on that plane.
It does. It's this is another one of those times where I'm going to say it feels like more like a pure rock and roll album than any one particular genre. Like, it just feels like, hey, rock and roll, there you go. And it happens to be 1973. You know, punk wasn't quite a thing yet, but it was getting there. And you had all this leftover stuff from the 60s, almost. I'm loath to say it, but it almost kind of reminds me of how The Who was when they got started, when they were kind of not what was acceptable. Well, they weren't what was normal at the time.
Yeah.
And that it kind of is like that moniker of, like, it fits into that where it's kind of safe, but it's kind of not for the general audience. So I definitely appreciated that.
Yeah, it's very hard to listen to this with 1973 ears, considering I wasn't even born yet. But you know, listening to this in 2022, it doesn't sound that transgressive or shocking at all. But I, you know, because I know a little bit about the history of the band and the history of rock and roll, I know that it was. So it's one of those things where, as time goes on and social mores change, that this is no longer as shocking or on the edge of what would become punk as it was at the time.
And I brought this up before, just to kind of train on what Ben just said. If you listen to this with the ears of today and the mind of today, you're not going to perhaps understand it or appreciate it as much, which is why I always say, hey, if you're listening to something that's like 20, 30 years older and you've never heard it before, or you heard it but you didn't pay too much attention to it, the best thing to do is try to listen to other music that was going on at the time and then say, okay, everything I know right now is just doesn't exist. All I know is these few songs, what's like on the top 40 radio, and then you hear this. And then tell me with a straight face that this wasn't aggressive or new or kind of on the fringe of society, so to speak, as you hear, you know, something that you might hear from David Cassidy, for example.
Right. Yeah, to that point, actually, if you look at stuff that were coming out that same year, so you get Pronounced Lynyrd Skynyrd by Lynyrd Skynyrd. You get Inversions by Stevie Wonder, Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd, Billion Dollar Babies by Alice Cooper, and Houses of the Holy by Led Zeppelin. So, you know, I would say Alice Cooper's also like influenced a lot of punk, even though I don't consider his sound to be punk at all. But if you look at that, you know, and listen to that stuff, this is distinctly different than that.
And I think this is why this is perhaps one of the reasons why the band has such longevity, because it was different for when it came out. And while there certainly are other bands now you could associate this, I've actually I mentioned to someone the other day when I was listening to it that it's almost like if you can envision something like the White Stripes nowadays, it has that same, it didn't sound the same, but it has the same feel to it. Like, it's that whole very just, it feels underproduced in a way, but you know it's not.
Yes.
And I, whenever, you know, back when that band came out, when Jack White got his start, you know, everyone tell me how amazing and cool it was. I'm like, this is nothing new, dude. This happened like before any of us were born. Like, I listened to some of this from my older friends. Like, what do you mean? Like, this is like a good like 15, 20 years before he even knew who this guy was. What do you mean this is new? You know? And of course, no offense to that particular artist, but that, I mean, it's true that this is nothing new. And I think, again, I've said this before on this podcast, with the advent of the internet, and YouTube being a thing, and the world of information at your fingertips, I think people are starting to realize more and more that it's kind of hard to be original, like truly original anymore. At some point, you are going to be influenced by something. Whether or not you want to admit to it, you're going to have some kind of influence. It may not be exactly what your preferred band sounds like, your preferred artist sounds like, but you're going to take something that you like from each artist and kind of go with that. And then if you do become a musician or an artist yourself, yeah, you might have your own personal spin on this, but at the end of the day, hey, you got these ideas from somewhere else. And the good artist is the one that says, hey, yeah, this might be my idea on paper, but I got this idea overall from this band or this person that existed like 30, 40 years ago. And hell, even to some extent, there's that jazz musician that was in the 30s, Lucille Bowen, I think is her name. Ben, you know I'm talking right. about? The dirty blues lady.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. There was more than one, but
there's more than one, but that's the one that's like, there was a very explicit song that she wrote called Till the Cows Come Home. And if you read the lyrics, you could swear it came off some like hip hop album of today, but it didn't. This is written back in like 1935, 36. So, if you really want to touch base and say how, oh, this stuff is new and it's shocking, it's really not. Humans have been doing this for much longer than people realize.
Yeah, definitely.
Hasn't been written down. So that's my soapbox.
Yep, I think you're completely right on that. One thing I will say about this album, to get it back to it, is that I know that it probably wasn't, at least not all of it, but it sounds like this was recorded live, meaning that the entire band was playing at the same time as opposed to individual tracks. It's like somebody laying down a drum track and then going back and laying guitars over it. Maybe some of that was just done with overdubs on this, so that they may have recorded a primary track live and then did some overdubs, but it sounds like it's the full band playing to my ears.
And that's a possibility. There is a little bit of fuzz in the production, not in a bad way, but you can almost tell like it's there. And part of me wonders if that's just recording equipment at the time. But at the same time, it could be when for those of you listening, if you've never been to a live show, there's usually some kind of feedback, some kind of reverb, some kind of fuzz, if you will, that's playing in the speakers. Mm-hmm. And that's just something you get from like all these instruments playing at once. There's really no way to kind of cut that out. There are some live performances you might see nowadays that it doesn't sound like that because everyone's got this like really awesome production quality and they've got these instruments that can move things out. But if you're going to a live show and you're not going to some big like award ceremony, it's very raw and it does have that feel to it. So I definitely can understand why you would think that.
Yeah. So what did you think of this?
So I actually liked it. I've never listened to the entire album as a whole. I'd actually heard Personality Crisis and Trash a lot, and I knew who the band was, but I didn't hear the other songs on this album until we actually sat down and listened to it. So I don't want to say a breath of fresh air, but it was very, very nice getting something a little bit different than what we've been doing so far, but still in the same vein. And it feels more like almost like a rock and roll band. So I'm kind of glad we kind of touch on that and get outside of just our punk and post-punk and goth feel. It's like, hey, we can do other music too. And this is a perfect example of that. But it was very well produced. Everything seems spot on. They're all good musicians. I mean, if any complaints I have from here on out, it's not going to be from musicianship, that's for sure.
No, I definitely will agree with that. I thought that the musicianship on all of this was pretty good. It actually kind of made me wish that I could go see one of their live shows from the era because it was very rollicking. It's the word that kept coming to mind. It sounded like they were having a good time. It's not, I will say, again, I couldn't quite get the Rolling Stones comp out of my head, and I'm not the hugest Rolling Stones fan, so take that for whatever it is. But for something that came out in 1973, again, this is different than what a lot of other people were doing, even if it did sound like something that a slightly older band was doing. But it was enjoyable. There are some really good songs on here. There's a lot of what I would consider filler tracks too, but there's some really good stuff.
And that's rhyme. It's that there's a lot of songs on here that I feel like overpower the other ones that might otherwise be perhaps better than they've been received as. Whether or not that's the band's fault, I certainly don't think it is. I think it's just what gets played more often. There are some on here that I'm just kind of like, I might remove this one. I might remove this one, make it a little bit shorter. Does this one really fit? But for the most part, it's a very solid album for me.
Yeah, I am, and I've heard, and I don't know how the truth to this, but I've heard that they didn't really have any plan going into the studio, and that it was just like, well, we've got these tracks that we've been doing live for a while, and these are the ones that the audience is like, so those are the ones we're going to record. So, and it's a debut album, and we can't forget that. So this is a band that's fairly young in their career, basically just doing what they were playing live, and then deciding to record it to tape, as opposed to having, spent a lot of time either writing in preparation to go into the studio, or being one of these bands that has been around for a long time and just has a whole bunch of stuff back catalog that they can cycle through.
Definitely, and that's something that we it'll come up a lot here as well. I don't know that I'd agree with some people's assessment of this being like a life-changing album or one of the best albums ever. I know there's people that feel that way. But yeah, it's something that I think is important. Especially if you're into this kind of music, it's worth your time. It's definitely worth a listen to. As we'll get down through this.
Yeah, 100%. And again, if I was a homosexual man in New York City in 1974 and heard this, I might have a completely different opinion of it. It might have changed my life. Or even if I wasn't, if I was just a regular rock and roll fan and just something that's extravagant and fun. Hard to say, because representation does matter. And this is even listening to it, what, 50 years later, some of it still sounds really fresh.
Yeah, there's actually when we get to the albums or the tracks rather, there's a couple of them on here. I'm just like, this does not sound like it was recorded back then. The other thing I wanted to say too before we get too far into this is this also feels like a band that you listen to at a bar. Like it's very much got that vibe of like, hey, we're a fun band and you guys are drinking, so we're here to party.
Yeah, it
And
made me want to be
it's
at their live show.
yeah, and that's I think part of the whole like glam rock part of it, where it's just like, because glam bands are always been like that. It's always been like the party band, so to speak, and the nothing's really supposed to be taken seriously. That's another vibe I kind of got from this. It's a fun band. It's something that yeah, hey, New York Dolls are gonna play. Let's go have some beers and listen to it.
Yeah,
And
totally.
not no one may no one's probably gonna be like a super fan of this band, but we're still gonna enjoy it. That's kind of where this falls into.
Yeah, let's go ahead and go to trash because I really don't have anything else to say. Would you like to go first or would you like me to?
Sure. So the ones it's got for me, of course, Personality Crisis is arguably, I think, their best song on here. I know a lot of when I bring this up a lot, hey, you like the first song on the album. Well, sometimes that's the strongest song on the album. To me, I feel like that is. If you want to know what this band is like and what to listen to, and you're not really sure, listen to that song. That pretty much encapsulates what the band is about. If you like that song, you're gonna like everything else they've done. If you don't like it, you're not gonna like the band. That's kind of how I felt about it. Going down the list, Looking for a Kiss was good. Lonely Planet Boy was pretty good. Trash, I think, is probably their second best song on here. It's a very fun song. To borrow one of Ben's words, it's rousing. It was fun. I listened to it going, okay, this is kind of like a nonsensical song. I like it. And then Bad Girl and then Jet Boy are the ones that really kind of stick out to me. The other tracks on here, while not bad, I might pull Frankenstein and I might pull Private World from this album, not because they're bad, just because I'm like, I don't know that it felt like it was more filler to me. But everything else on here, the ones that I did not list, I'd still say are good. They didn't stick out.
I don't have a whole lot to add to that. I do think the first side of the album is the best side. Personality Crisis, I agree with Buzz. I think it's not only it well, it's the definitely the best song on here. I don't know that I would say that it's their best song, but it's the best song on this particular album. I also like Looking for a Kiss and Vietnam Baby. I think Frankenstein would be really good live, where they could vamp and like kind of show out and do performance as well as the music. But on the album, it didn't do a whole lot for me. As far as the second half, second side, Trash is good. I like the Bo Diddley cover Pills they did, and Jet Boy.
Kind of a little breakdown there. Well, is there anything else you want to add production wise or music wise or anything you just did not like about this?
No, like I said, the only negative I can say, and it's probably only a negative to me, is that it was somewhat derivative of the Rolling Stones, but I think that a lot of people would actually like it, because that is just a pure ish rock and roll sound. So, especially for the time.
I would agree. Well, then shall we move on to grading?
Let's do it.
I'll let you go ahead and go first.
I'm going to give this a B. I think it's a good album. It's especially good for a debut album. There are some highlights on here. Like I said, it accomplished the mission of making me want to see the band live, which is what an album should do. I think we should probably at some point circle back around to some of their later albums to see how they evolve as a band and see what we think of those. But yeah, it's a good album.
So I'm going to kind of echo that a little bit. I'll do my little two grade system here. Musicianship wise, just from judging from the technical aspect of it, production, everything, this is getting an A plus for me. Everything was on point. Even the songs that I thought I might take away from this album were still good from a musicianship standpoint. I mean, everything was, it felt like they knew what they were doing. These are people that know how to play their instruments. They're not just, hey, pick up a bass because we need a bass player for tonight. This is someone that actually knows what they're doing. The fact that pretty much everyone in this band does something other than one particular thing. So like, case in point, David Johansson, while yes, he's singing, he's not playing any guitars. He did harmonica on a few of these tracks. So, I mean, he did something. It wasn't just, this is all I'm doing and that's it. And when you have that from a band, when the majority of the band is multi-talented, I enjoy that a little bit more. From the perspective of being a punk album, what we talk about in this podcast, I'm going to give it a B-, not because it's a terrible album, because it's not. It didn't quite have what I look for in my punk music. And again, if this was not a punk, post-punk goth review podcast, I might be grading this differently, but I do try to stay objective. But it's still very good, and it does encapsulate a little bit of rebelliousness. So, and it's not really a punk band. They are a proto-punk band. So that's why I'm giving a B-. So that's where I stand at.
All right. I think that sums up at least this spin for the New York Dolls. So we may check back on them at some other point and see what we think of some of their other stuff. Or we may not. It depends on, we got a lot of other things to get to. Speaking of which, we have not yet decided what we're doing next. So what are we going to do next?
I think first we should ask the question, would you buy this album?
Oh, yes, I forgot about that. I would buy this album.
Yeah, this is definitely a buy for me. I don't know that I'd rush out to buy it on like Amazon or somewhere, but if I saw it sitting at a record store or a CD store or a music store, I would definitely pick it up.
Yes, this would be one of those that would be a pleasant surprise to find going through an old vinyl shop or something like that.
And that's, I think that's what I want to listen to. I want to listen to it on vinyl. I don't know that I want it on CD just because of the period it came out in.
Yeah, that's me. I mean, you know, I'm sure it was released on CD, but when they went from analog to digital, I'm sure it lost a little something due to compression. So.
But other than that, I don't know. I think next week's going to be a surprise. It's been kind of a weird week or so. We took that week off for Thanksgiving, so I think we need some time to recoup and get rid of some of these leftovers. And we'll surprise everyone with something next week, I think.
get over our tryptophan and see what we can do. But thanks for checking in and listening. And if you have not, I would recommend you go listen to this episode.
Ditto.
Right. Till next time.